Houston Dynamo, Portland Timbers, Sporting Kansas, Los Angeles Galaxy, Beach Pass, this is my Toronto FC, Real Salt Lake, this is my red, white, and blue, Chicago Fire, this is my anthem to you, Columbus Crew, FC Dallas, New York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
How good is it to have MLS back in our lives for real? What a great opening weekend. We're going to break down everything that happened this past weekend in MLS, and it was a lot, with Taylor Twellman, ESPN analyst. We'll have him on a little bit later. First, though, let me send you to pitchpass.com. In addition to all the ways you can find this particular podcast through iTunes, Buzzsprout, or YouTube, or whatever, we also have some interesting articles up there as well, including one from Sebastian Salazar, who wrote a really cool piece about Sepp Blatter's derogatory comments about MLS. He actually asked some international players who play in MLS what their thoughts were on Sepp's comments. So that's very interesting. Pitchpass.com, so go there for that. Bring in a guy, though, to start off the show, who actually didn't even play this past week. He is, and I will say it, a legend at New England Revolution. He's Matt Reese. Matt?
Yes, hello.
How are you, sir?
I am doing well, thank you.
I appreciate you checking in with the podcast. Thank you very much.
Sure.
What'd you do this past weekend?
What did I do this past weekend?
Yeah, because I felt like the Revs were like the kid not invited to the birthday party. So like everybody else is playing and jumping around on the moon bounce, and you guys are at home doing whatever it is you guys did.
Well, ironically, we did have a birthday party.
We weren't invited to that one is the question. You had your own birthday party.
No, not mine. Mine's at the end of the month, but my oldest son had a friend's birthday party. So yeah, there were birthday parties. But it wasn't really like MLS birthday party.
How old is the oldest son?
Oldest son is 6.5, and then I have identical twins that are 3.5.
Okay,
all boys.
So you threw down what? Bounce You, Little Jim, Romp and Roll style. What'd you do?
Well, we've done it all for the boys, but this was the candlepin bowling, the Massachusetts bowling with the little balls and the small pins.
I always think to myself, is that a good investment opportunity? Because it feels like they book these things, they're packed to the gills, but then you got to worry about all the legal stuff if something goes wrong.
Yeah, there's, especially out here, there's definitely a lot of time from the months of December to now where there's snow on the ground.
Indoors.
Everybody goes indoors. So, yes, there is money to be made there.
I'm just giving you some things to think about, Matt. I mean, I know you can't play. You can't play forever.
You're a couple years late on that one. I've already looked into that.
So, what did you? Did you watch any of the matches over the weekend? What did the team? Did you guys have the practice? What happened this weekend in Revs land?
Yeah, we had. we did a scrimmage, inter-squad scrimmage, on Saturday. We had Sunday off. So yeah, we did our own little final tune-up, and then Sunday was off. Watched some of the games Saturday, and then some of the games Sunday. It was good.
How much does that suck, though? I mean, it's the first weekend of the season. Everybody wants to play. Everybody's kind of like over training camp, and instead of kicking off your season, you guys are having another scrimmage.
Yeah, no, it's going into it, so it's not surprising. It's not like they canceled the game. So we knew it going into it. We weren't, overly hyped up about playing. So, it's just the way things go. And unfortunately, with the odd number of teams, one team had to sit out, and it was us.
Well, maybe Don was thinking of you, being that you're going to be 38 at the end of the month, and thought, you know what, let's give him a bye week to start the season.
Yeah, well, if he was really looking out for me, he would do it kind of in the middle half of the season when I really need it.
So is it an advantage that you got to see the Fire play, or is it not a big deal? And you guys are still, to them, kind of a wild card.
Yeah, no, I think it definitely is an advantage. I think definitely to know kind of what they look like and how, because they do have a little bit of a different look to them with Jeff and Limpair in there. So it is a little bit of a different look. And, yeah, we do get to kind of see the bride before she walks down the aisle, but you know, we got to really focus on ourselves more than we focus on other teams.
Yeah, and since they got taken out to the woodshed by the Galaxy, it's almost a detriment because now it's like, all right, you know you're going to get a fired up team who's going to be wanting to actually show their best foot after last week's debacle.
Mm-hmm. And it's ironic that their name is the Fire, too.
Why is that, Matt?
Because they're fired up.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, I'll serve them up to you the whole interview, and you can just keep knocking them out. I like that. All right, so what is it like for you at this stage of your career? You've been the undisputed number one for a really long time in New England, and this year you're in a bit of a battle. How is that helpful to you as you go into this season?
I mean, even though you can say that I was undisputed number one, I mean, there's always pressure. There's always, you know, somebody there that's trying to take your spot. So, you know, I think if you look back in the beginning of my career when Kevin and I were together, I think, you know, that competition made us both really, really good. So, you know, I'm enjoying it, and I, you know, I'm kind of at this stage in my career knowing that there's, you know, couple seasons left, just trying to enjoy it all and trying to you know, I'm really enjoying the grind and really, you know, taking it all in and really trying to do my best, and you know, I think that's coming out in my play.
I don't want to push you out the door, but have you thought about the next step? We've seen a lot in the last few years. I'm thinking about Pat Onstad, of guys who have kind of nicely segued from one stage of their career to the next step of their career. Have you thought about that at all?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it would be foolish of me with a wife and three kids not to think about that and not to try and plan for it. It's just the hardest part of that is if you find yourself planning too much for it, then, you know, you're going to forget about what you're doing. And I think the end will come up a lot sooner, but it would be really naive of me not to try and make sure that I have, you know, a few things talked about and working with some people. So, yeah, it's tough. You know, it's a part of you that from when I was 5 years old playing soccer and all the way up through high school and college and, you know, for the past, you know, 15 years. You know, it's a big part of me and a big part of who I am is eventually going to be gone. So it's tough at, you know, 38, 39, 40, trying to reinvent yourself. But, you know, it's the way things go.
How do you feel physically, though, as you enter the season?
I feel great. You know, I think, you know, I kind of get a chuckle where people call me the off-injured Matt Reese when for 15 years I basically missed probably 12 games, 13 games. So, you know, it's really, it makes me kind of laugh because, I've been very healthy in my whole career. And, I've been, you know, there even last year I was available for every game. So, you know, I feel good going into the season and, I'm, you know, just excited to try and get the Revs back into the playoff picture.
Do you ever needle Bobby about his last name in relation to He Got Game?
Jesus, you mean?
Yes. That's what I would throw that around him all the time just to rattle him up a little bit.
Yeah. No, I nobody really gives him that much too much. You know, we have so many young kids now that I think that movie was a little bit before their time.
You mean Diego didn't see He Got Game back when he was baby?
You know what? I'll have to ask them. It would be very interesting to see how many people have actually seen that movie.
Speaking of Diego, I have a question for you about him. And living in D.C., we watched how the Freddie Adu situation played out. And I talked with Bobby Boswell when he was playing for D.C. United and Freddie Adu was here. And I asked him, how do you treat a 14-year-old when you guys are guys in your 20s? Literally, Diego could be your son. And
yes. I remind him of that a lot.
That's good. When you ask him to do stuff for you, it's, hey, you know what? I could be your dad. Could be old enough to be your dad.
Yeah.
How is it? How do you guys, I don't want to say relate to him because that might be too much of a disconnect, but how do you, as a keeper, maintain your plugged-inness to guys who could, or 16, 17, 18 years old?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things that I enjoy the most is that it does keep me young, you know, coming out and hearing all the guys talk about all the new stuff, either on Twitter or, you know, websites or music or any of that stuff, you know, it really keeps me on the pulse of what's hip.
And, you know what? Nothing sounds hipper than you saying it that way, Matt.
That's the reason why I do it. No, but it's good. And you know, I try and help out Diego. And, you know, we have a very good relationship. And I get him and beat him up on the soccer tennis court every day. So, you know, it's good. He's, I think, a little bit different than Freddie Adu. I think he's a lot more grounded. I think he's got a great family, and not that I don't know anything about Freddie Adu's family, but you know, they're very supportive of Diego, and you know, he's very supportive of them. So it's great to see, you know, it's great to see guys like that. And you know, I know when I was his age, there was no way I could play professionally, but you know, he's doing it, and you know, every year he's getting a little bit more comfortable, and he's just got such a great soccer mind and such a great first touch that his size and his youth doesn't really get affected that much.
Do you think is this the year that he features a bit more in the setup?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think, you know, one of the fortunate or unfortunate things when you're a team struggling, young kids and get chances to play. You know, you look at Kellen Rowe, who comes in and plays a ton of games for us last year as a, you know, 20, 21-year-old, that, you know, it's great for them because they get, you know, so much experience. But it's tough for us because we have to rely on such young kids to get it done. So, you know, that's the byproduct of you know, struggling a little bit.
I'm going to ask you a question, and the question is, what went wrong last year? But I ask that in a way when I watched the Revs play. I don't think that the team was as bad as people said it was or as they thought they were going to be in 2012. I thought the team was pretty exciting to watch, especially considering what my expectations of the team were going into the year. What went wrong, in your opinion, on last season? And what are you guys doing in 2013 to make sure that doesn't happen again?
Well, I mean, if you look at our games last year, I think there was two games where we lost by more than one goal. And, you know, that's very, very disappointing in that we were so close on so many games that it was usually, you could look back at the video and say, okay, this is the one instance, this is the one point where if we won, finish our chance, great. If we stopped them from scoring, great. And that could have turned in probably like six or seven of our games. So, like you said, even though our record wasn't great, I don't think we were very far off at all to being in the playoffs. So, you know, to do that this year, I think having a pretty solid core of guys coming back and not having to break in a new coach and not having to, you know, get a bunch of new players and players coming and going. And, you know, obviously losing Shari, who was, you know, quite a big piece to the puzzle for so many years. You know, having gone through all of that last year, you know, I think is going to set us up for great things this year.
And I also feel like, you know, you lost Shari during the season last year. You picked up Jerry mid-season. Toha came in late. The team should be a little more settled going into this year with some really talented pieces as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, guys like Juan and even Lee, who, yeah, you know, we got him after the first couple games. You know, and Lee and Juan and Jerry is another one who was with us, but he was always with under a national team. So, you know, having those guys around all the time now and getting to know them and how we can use them effectively is only going to help us. So, yeah, I think, you know, we don't really have those excuses anymore. So we really have to perform out there.
What's the latest on Saïr?
You know, he's really working hard. He is, I think he sees the light at the end of the tunnel. It's always going through injuries is probably the hardest thing as a professional athlete, because, you know, you're used to being out there and contributing and helping day in, day out. And when you can't do that, it's really, really, really tough mentally. And that's the hardest thing. And, you know, I think he finally sees the light at the end of the tunnel. He's been jogging quite a bit and doing a lot of, stuff on the field and with just passing drills that are fairly simple and kind of with it getting integrated back in with the team that way. So, it's something that we don't want to rush it. It's a long season, and we need to make sure that he's 100% to help us.
What have you seen from Andrew Farrell that has impressed or excited you?
I think, first of all, he's a great athlete. And, the thing that really excites me is he's got a soccer mind, and he knows what he's doing out there in terms of trying to find passes and not just blasting the ball away. And, he is trying to combine with people, and he is trying to find the forward feet and not just, lump a ball forward. He's going to be a good player. It's just, it's going to take him a little time. He's pretty raw in terms of positioning and those kind of things. Plus, he's never really had a definitive position. He's kind of plugged in and filled in wherever he needed to. So he's, obviously we decided that he was our guy. So we jumped on him and picked him up first.
I was going to ask you, and I'm glad you brought up the jack of all trades kind of thing. You've had a chance to see him and observe him now for a few months. Where do you see him long term as being his best position that suits his skills?
I think on the outside, which gives him the ability to get forward. I think that's probably the best spot for him, which he's a very good defender and physically can get up and down the field. So. Hopefully he can do that for us.
Before I let you go, I got to ask you, what's a reasonable expectation now for New England for the 2013 season?
Say that again.
What's a reasonable expectation for from a fan perspective, and then also in-house, what are you guys expecting of yourselves?
Well, I every year that I've played, it's always been, make the playoffs. You can see it to the last couple of years that you don't have to be leading the pack the whole entire way. A lot of the times the teams, because of the long season, the teams that do well towards the end and really kind of put things together, the last 2-3 months are the teams that really do well at the end. So, for us is to be in the race all the way up to the end and to make sure that, we get one of those playoff spots. And, I definitely think that that's doable, and I definitely think that, we all should be held to that standard at least.
Matt, as a DC United fan, I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Well, that's kind of shocking.
that's why I said it. I'm like, wow, I'm really getting along with Matt Reese here. This is not what I expected.
I thought for sure you would say that I was dead to you, like everybody else in DC does.
Do you enjoy that, though? Do you, and especially as a keeper, and when you a lot of times it doesn't happen in DC, but the supporters groups are right on your back. Is it hard sometimes not to interact with those guys and to kind of just pretend you're blocking it all out, or are you really blocking it all out?
No, I mean there's obviously times when the ball's at the other end of the field, and you're still focused on what's going on, but you'll hear everything. It's great. I think that's what's making the league so much better, is that you have the supporters groups that are really coming to the forefront and really kind of pushing these teams and these franchises along, and having such epic games against DC's and Chicago's and, always having that go with the fans. And, I think you're doing something right if you're not necessarily hated, but if you're a villain for the teams that you play against. I think that's kind of what we're doing right, I think, in the last couple of years in terms of the MLS is embracing the supporters and really trying to ratchet that up even more and get the communities and the towns and the cities behind what we're doing.
What's the best burn that you got on the road? And by best burn, I mean the one that you kind of, you chuckled internally, but you didn't want to give them the satisfaction knowing that, you know what, that was a good one. That was funny. I'll give you that.
Yeah, no, it's when, you know, the fans do their homework. I remember, I think it was in Salt Lake back when they played at the stadium in Utah, at Utah University, whatever. Someone said something about my, like, called my wife's name and said, you know, tell Nicole we said hi. And, you know, that's whenever you do your homework,
yeah,
it's the same thing with a good prank. If you know, there's a backstory and there's, you know, something to it, it always makes it a little bit better. You know, if somebody just says, you know, your mom sucks, like, that's, yeah.
Yeah, but when they take the time and they do the research and then they come out with the notes of going, oh, this is Matt Reese's mom's name, and that's what we're going to say.
Yeah.
That you tip your cap to.
Yeah, no, that one you say, okay, well, you know, at least you're not just going for the vanilla stuff.
Yeah, you're putting the work in. I applaud that.
You respect that.
Matt, as a fellow baldy and as a fellow old head, I secretly do root for you to do well in all of your endeavors, especially this year, except not against United.
I'll try to remember that, but, you know, as you get older, your memory kind of goes.
All right, well, I'm hoping as you're walking out, you think to yourself, oh, wait, Roach said to not do well in this match. So, you know what, now I gotta submarine the whole team here.
I don't think so.
Okay, all right, worth a try. Matt Reese, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
No problem.
It's Matt Reese, New England Revolution, and, you know what? Our next guest, ESPN analyst, Taylor Twellman, former New England Revolution. Ah, Taylor.
Yeah.
I feel bad, Taylor, because I just had Matt Reese on, and I should have said, do you have the message to pass from Matt to you? And I totally forgot that you guys played together. I don't know what I was thinking.
It's no biggie.
Well, since we were talking to Matt, you know, I gave him a little grief that they had the weekend off while just excitement was going on all across MLS. But I asked him about the season and what he thought went wrong last year and what they've done to correct it in the offseason. And, you know, he said that they lost a lot of one-goal games, and the key for them is going to be to tighten it up and make sure that doesn't happen going into the season. What are your thoughts on your old team for the 2013 season?
I just feel like the New England Revolution, for some reason, over the past couple of years, have just had that knack of giving up that awful goal at a critical time, whether, albeit if it's after the 80th minute, before halftime, coming out after halftime. And while they looked more exciting last year, the reality is the points weren't much different than the previous two seasons. So I think this year, it has to be result-based. You can say one thing about the style of play and what they have to do, but the fact is they have to get more points. They have to get more wins. They've been in position to get 3 points more often than not, but again, they've had that knack of giving up bad goals. And while a lot of people say, well, they don't score a lot of goals, I really look at that defense needs to be better.
You know, and they spent the first overall pick on Andrew Farrell, and you would think, okay, looking at it just on paper, they're doing something to shore up the defense. But again, just talking to Matt, he didn't say it, but if I read between the lines, it kind of seemed like, hey, you know what, this guy's going to take a little bit of time to settle in, and don't expect him to be the quick fix answer for their defensive troubles.
Yeah, I don't know if it's I've always been a huge person on the, you know, while the individual parts, it's the sum that makes the defense. And so, you know, the sum of the parts with Omar Gonzalez in L.A. is awesome because he makes Todd Donovan, A.J. De La Garza, Sean Franklin, whoever's next to him, Leonardo, better. But if Omar was in a different kind of lineup, you don't know the effect of Omar Gonzalez. So, to Andrew Farrell's credit, yeah, he's a number one draft pick, but is he the one-man wrecking crew for the defense of the Revs? No. I mean, let's be honest. A.J. Soares needs to show up. He needs to start playing. Kevin Alston hasn't played to his potential of being the draft pick that he was in the first-round pick. So while a lot of us are probably going to say, well, they have the number one draft pick, the fact is everybody else has to step up their game as well.
Yes or no, before we move on, are they a playoff team?
I think they're on the cusp. But when I look at the Eastern Conference, you tell me if they're a playoff team. Houston, Sporting KC, DC, Columbus is better. Montreal goes to Seattle and wins. Montreal is going to be good. Chicago, even though they lost 4-0, they improved, so that they're on the cusp. But that Eastern Conference is a very difficult one. Oh, yeah, by the way, New York Red Bulls.
Well, and speaking of, I was going to ask you, because it was a great weekend for MLS. It's just a great advertisement. No matter what match you turned on, there was something going on that you could go, this is really cool. And obviously, it's great to have the season back. I know you're going to say you had the most exciting match. You had the most exciting match.
What, are you gonna tell me we didn't?
That was a great match no matter when it happened. But the fact that it was the opening match and it was on the national stage with you guys all there, it was, I said it earlier, it was a great advertisement for MLS.
Yeah. If anyone wants to call me, hit me up on Twitter and say there was a better game in opening weekend than Portland, New York, I'd love to hear your reasoning, but it was awesome. I couldn't believe, I said it before the game, and everyone laughed at me in the ESPN truck. I said, this game's going to be 3-3, and everybody's like, yeah, right, whatever. And I'm like, it just is. New York cannot find a way to defend, and I think they're better with Olave back there, and he looks like he's going to be a beast. But this Portland team has completely changed their identity. I know it's only one game in, but it was something else, I'm telling you.
Okay, but you say they completely changed their identity, but it followed the same script as Portland has followed since their inception, which is play exciting brand of soccer, and then at the end, kind of break your heart. And I know they fought back for the draw, but fighting
back
for...
Wait, you're telling me last year Portland Timbers were an exciting brand of soccer? No chance.
I thought they had exciting pieces, and especially when they play at home.
That's totally different. You can have a couple pieces, but you can't be an exciting brand of soccer and only scored 34 goals in the year, dude.
Okay,
no way.
But what is different about this team than last year's team? Because it's
They've got six guys that can play. I mean, I've already seen it. Ryan Johnson didn't finish two goals he probably should have, but he's a true number nine that's going to work hard, different than Chris Boyd. If Darlington Nagbe plays 80% of what he did in opening weekend, he's already a different player. And their best player, Diego Valeri, is going to make everyone around him better. Will Johnson should have had a goal. There are so many more options now. I don't know about their depth. I think their depth is very questionable, but if you look at that attacking 4 to 6 players, it's a completely different team.
Okay, Mr. Stryker, I will give you their attacking options are exciting, but again, I'd argue that their attacking options were exciting in years past. They still have the same problem.
In what
they
sense?
They can't defend.
I'll argue with you for hours. In what sense? They scored 34 goals last year. That's second fewest in MLS.
My point is they still leak bad goals.
That's fine. That's totally fine. But on the other hand, they're going to score more than 34 goals. So how many games last year did they miss chances, not even create chances? Now a team has to defend Portland Timbers because they have a number 8 in Diego Valeri.
Agreed.
That easily is going to be one of the top 10 players in this league at the end of 2013. I didn't watch a Portland game last year. Way too boring. Chris Boyd wanted nothing to do with it. Darlington Nagbe looked disinterested. Diego Chara wasn't there. They didn't have a Will Johnson in the midfield. It's a different team. Now, New York, on the other hand, the same team.
You're not putting much stock in Henry's nondescript performance, first time out of the box, artificial turf, long distance travel. Any excuses you want, are you putting any stock in the performance?
Yes, I am, because in the 82nd minute, he had a full-on breakaway to put the game away. And that bad first touch, his actions after that bad first touch, listen, what's very concerning for me if I'm a Red Bulls fan, and I don't know why, but every single time I watch Thierry Henry, I see a different Thierry Henry. In one game, I see a guy that I'm like, you know what? This guy is going to score 41 goals this year. And then the next guy I see, he doesn't even want to be there.
So your concern is his consistency. Are you concerned about, hey, this is the first sign of a slip in peak?
I'm going to actually make my judgment after this weekend in San Jose. But you're on the road. You have a first game for Mike Petke as your new head coach. You literally are the assistant coach on the field. You know Mike Petke and his coaching staff are looking at Thierry Henry, Janino, and Cahill, for that matter, to guide that team. Not one of those players in that second half led the team they had the experience. So for me, I'm like, it's just disconcerting for me. If I'm a Red Bulls fan, you're up 3-1 at half on the road.
So are you in agreement with me of the opinion that Robbie Keane is unquestionably the best player in the league right now?
Ooh. No, I don't know if I'm in agreement with that. Why would you say, let me ask you, why is Robbie Keane the best player?
Because
he's paid the most?
No. I looked at what he did without Landon Donovan, without David Beckham, and he scored the one goal, but look at the hand that he played in the other goals. His passes were like, he showed me something with passing. And again, I don't want to say that I'm a Robbie Keane follower, but I have never seen him pass that well before. So maybe he's always had that ability, but he did more than just poach goals, which is what I always thought Robbie Keane was known for.
I think he's one of my favorite, if not my favorite, leaders in this league. I'm going to say that right now, because the guy with that price tag, the guy with that pedigree, has shown up, trained every day, work hard every day. He's leading the team. I mean, he's captain of the LA Galaxy now, not Landon Donovan. And I think that says a lot. Right now, sure. I mean, I'll agree with you that Robbie Keane is, but I'm not so sure. At the end of this year, there's not going to be a couple guys getting into that equation.
What did you think of the Galaxy performance? Was it complete in all aspects as it looked?
Of course it is. I mean, you win 4-0 at home when you actually have the day of the banners being raised, you're getting your rings. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty complete. And I said this at halftime of our broadcast. Listen, Landon Donovan steps away, okay, we respect the decision. But as a player, you relish the opportunity. And Mike McGee's going to get an opportunity. Any questions? 3 goals, first game? I'll take it.
Will you take him for your national team?
I don't know that yet. I honestly don't know, but I definitely know this. I'll take Mike McGee on my roster on any MLS team right now for sure.
Okay, so we talked about the most exciting match, your match. We talked about Galaxy and Chicago. Anything else over the weekend stick out to you as more than just first weekend of more of an indicator of, oh, okay, this could be a thing moving forward into the season?
I think Montreal. Montreal, and it's not like they went to Seattle. And, yeah, I know Eddie Johnson and Brad Evans hit the crossbar, but Montreal went in and looked good. They had a game plan. They executed the game plan. It was really interesting to watch that game. And I sat at halftime of that game. Alexi and I were sitting next to each other, and I said to him, I said, this is it. Who is this? And either Seattle played really bad or Montreal is better. And I think Montreal is better. I think Montreal could really surprise some teams in the Eastern Conference.
And what do you attribute that to? A full season, a full preseason with all of your Italians, the change in coaching?
I don't know. I think it's a combination of both. I think it's, for a lot of those guys, it's the understanding what MLS is about. And your first run through it, I remember my first run through MLS in 2002, it takes a little getting used to. So you definitely have to have an understanding of it. And they've got good veterans on that team. Another team, I question their depth.
Yeah.
You know, and that's going to be a common theme, I think, throughout MLS is if there's any significant injuries, you know, Vancouver's getting tested right away with no Jaden Barrett. So I think depth will be questioned throughout a lot of teams, but Montreal starting 11 in Seattle is pretty good.
I thought, and I tweeted this as well, and I'm glad you brought it up, as impressed as I was with the Montreal performance, my concern was, first of all, the age of their key figures, and then the depth and when they need to be rested, or if they get injured, kind of when they get injured, if you ask me.
Yeah, in that it's unfortunately the theme in MLS is that the older player, through the travel and the rigors of playing in the heat and on some bad fields, it kind of catches up to you, but you never know. You know, that's why they play the games and be very curious to see. And, you know, to stay in the Eastern Conference real quick, Sporting KC has the worst first half I've ever seen them have over the last 3 years, and they won 3-1. So I think they're going to be pretty good.
And you brought up the team that I kind of follow from afar. They're not my favorite team or the team that I support, but I definitely enjoy watching them, and that's Vancouver. Up top, I thought they looked really, really strong. The Jay DeMeritt injury, though, you got to temper expectations for that team, right?
You have to, because look at year one. Jay DeMeritt was injured a lot. They didn't go to the playoffs. Year two, he's played every game. He's an all-star. They go to the playoffs. And so Brad Rusin's going to have his hands full replacing Jay DeMeritt. you know, they looked exciting, albeit it's against Toronto, and I'm not high on Toronto whatsoever right now. So I look at that. Kenny Miller's got to do something. I mean, you come into this league as a DP, he gave the ball away three or four times brutally in the first half, so he's got to start doing something.
You brought up Toronto. I was going to say, are they the disgrace of the league? But then I look down in California and I go, oh, wait, no, they're not the disgrace of the league. What is Toronto, do they have a game plan now? And is it just a matter of Kevin Payne has a game plan? It's just going to take a while now to get all the pieces into the right places.
I think they have a game plan. Now, whether the game plan works or not, that's yet to be seen. So obviously we have to be a little patient before we rush to judgment. But it's one of those things where watching that team, where are goals going to come from?
Well, Earnshaw.
Okay. is that your answer?
Why would you be down on Earnshaw?
That's your answer? Like, that's where we're going with?
That's not my answer. That's Toronto FC's answer, because they signed him to do that.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, if that's their answer, then I think it's going to be tough.
And I got to ask you, of course, about my team. That would be DC United. Obviously, it was a loss on the road. But I look at it like it's Houston at home. Houston doesn't lose at home. Houston has United's number. Houston's a really, really good team as well. Ricardo Clark, was he as impressive as the game showed, or was the goals kind of helping out the overall result?
No, Ricardo Clark was very good. And thankfully, you know, the guy deserves something for all the people that have absolutely destroyed him over the last 2-3 years. He's deserving of it. But I look at DC and they had chances. And the weird thing was that in the open space, you know, Ben Olsen said it at halftime on a couple counterattacks, they had chances to really put Houston on their heels. They didn't do it. And that's something that I'd like to see more from DC in that aspect. Pahoy does a wonderful job of running the channels, being active all game, but you got to have something from him that's an offensive threat. And he's so hit or miss in front of the goal that sometimes I think teams are not going to respect him and actually double team guys coming out of the midfield. But that was the concerning thing for me if I was a DC United fan, where how many good opportunities they had on the counterattack in that first half. And last year they finished them. Game one, they struggled to make that final pass and that final shot.
Do you think D-Rowe's getting a pass?
Pardon me?
Do you think D-Rowe is getting a pass?
Do I think D-Rowe's getting a pass?
Yeah, and I say that because he does something really, really foolish in a preseason game, gets himself suspended for the first two games, and am I thinking too much into thinking, you know what, you got to be a little cooler head in that situation, and you cost your team the services of their best player for two matches, and I don't feel like anybody's really talking about how irresponsible that was.
I don't think he's getting a pass. Judging from what I see and hear from, you know, what's going on around the team, I think De Rosario's man enough to know that he definitely put his team behind the eight ball. But let me say this. Why does he get suspended? And it's Fabio Alonso's tackle and Chris Tierney doesn't get suspended. Or Sporting KC's melee after the DC Philly game. How come no one gets suspended?
You know, and those Desert Diamond Cup games were televised, unlike this United Sporting game or Philadelphia Union game.
Yeah, and that's the thing. They don't even have footage.
Yeah.
So I just, listen, I'm all about, you know, I actually agree 100% with Ben Olsen on the fact that these preseason games, there's players that are – I mean, Bright DK is out of this league. You know, he's out of the season, basically, torn ACL. And from what I hear, it's trialist slide tackling from behind, running into goalkeepers. I get it, and I understand that it needs to be cleaned up, but it's also got to be consistent. De Rosario is not the only one that did something, you know, stupid in the preseason. I just don't get it. I don't get why he gets it. No one else does.
I know you talked about this at halftime of the match, but I would like you to reiterate your thoughts on the Freddie Adu situation in Philadelphia, because it's really getting ugly.
Well, what's ugly about it is the fact that, you know, the way the salary cap rules are is that every owner is paying part of his first number. So whatever that number is, $367,000 or whatever, let's just say $375,000. Plus, every owner's chipping into that. And then the number above that goes to Philly. So if I'm an owner in a league, and that's where my money's going to that player, there's no way they can have a player making that amount of money the way Freddie Adu is and not on a roster training somewhere.
And as a fan of not the union or Freddie Adu, but a fan of the league, it's hard to root for either side in this thing because you can see the reasons why both people are digging in, but you can also see where both people are wrong in this situation.
Of course. I mean, listen, I'm not a huge Freddie Adu fan, and if I'm a GM, he's not on my roster. But you signed him to a contract as a league. So either you pay him out, are you really going to make him sit for 2 years? And then you ask yourself, if you're Freddie, well, Freddie, how long do you want to sit?
Yeah.
You know, so that's the point. Like, you don't feel one for the other. It's either you just both of them, you're like, you know what? No, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
You've made your thoughts on Freddie known just now, but I will ask you, is there a situation in this league where that is ideal for him?
I think Freddie's got to grow up. So in saying that, there is some situation, and I think the one situation that would really get Freddie Adu to play at his best is a situation that has a ton of character and egos in the locker room. And what I mean by that is, ironically, people will go, why would you need egos? Because then he's a nobody.
Yeah, exactly. Like a Red Bull situation where you got Henri, who is unquestionably the guy. And
you got Henri, you got Cahill,
yeah.
You got Janino, then you've got, you know, the American contingent in that locker room. I mean, Dax McCarty, for that matter, should look at Freddie and go, what are you doing?
Yeah. And won't have a problem saying that. Whereas in the union locker room, Freddie's basically one of the oldest guys on the team.
Right. I mean, look at Freddie Adu. Imagine Freddie Adu in LA Galaxy's locker room and he's mouthing off and not working hard. Imagine Robbie Keane. Imagine Omar Gonzalez. So, but then in saying that, part of me is like, well, does Freddie Adu really deserve to go to a franchise like that after the way it's gone? So it's difficult. It's honestly, it's a situation that I cannot believe it's in.
And as long as his mindset is, I'm a DP guy, I don't think it's ever going to change, no matter what locker room he goes in. Because if he does happen to end up with Red Bulls and that situation that you said happens, I could see him walking out all over again.
Right, and that's the point of growing up, that, I mean, you have to be a realist as an athlete. And at some point you have to say, do I love the game and do I want to play the game, or am I just going to go down, you know, in flames? And the way I look at it is, as young as he is, I wouldn't put it past him if he could turn it around. But there's a lot that has to be turned around, and I don't know if he's capable of it.
I talked to your friend and colleague, Alexi Lalas, a few weeks ago, and we were discussing the MLS snob mentality and how we've decided to be MLS snobs. And I think this past weekend really bore out what Alexi's argument is when he compares it to the EPL or Serie A. And he's not saying that the talent level is the same. He's saying it's competitive level and entertainment value. I think you saw this weekend that he's not crazy when he says things like that.
He's not crazy at all. I mean, anyone that argues with me, I love this about La Liga is so much better. Really? Competitively, it's that much better? You already know who the two teams are. We go into every MLS season not knowing who's going to win it. Now we have our favorites, we have our contenders, but do we really know? No, we don't. And that's coming after two seasons where the LA Galaxy are MLS Cup champions, and people could say, oh, okay, Taylor, yeah, sure. But the point is that parity has allowed all of these franchises an opportunity to succeed.
And
there's a reason why the best league in all sports in the world is the NFL. Why? Because there's parity, and every 5 years, your franchise has an opportunity to win.
And even as an MLS snob, I also love the fact that the league is, people will look at it and go, oh, it's a feeder league now. You know what? That's the next step. Before, it wasn't a feeder league. Now it's turning into a feeder league, and that's good for the league and good for the status of the league around the world.
Especially when you're a feeder league of third-round draft picks like Jeff Cameron going to Stoke City and then starting. So feeder league, whatever. As long as we're not feeding to the Scandinavian teams and the Scandinavian leagues, I'm all for it. If we're feeding to the English, German, Italy, Spanish leagues, French, fine. Anything else, now they should stay here.
Well, and what I was going to be my last point, but you kind of put a hole in it, because what I was going to say was, when you look at the offseason where you lost Breck Shea, you lost Andy Nahar, Zuzi flirted with leaving, and people were going, oh my God, all the young talent is being drained out of the league. And then you look at this weekend's matches. I loved what Yedlin looked like in Seattle. I love the kid in Vancouver. We got Valeri coming into the league. So, you know, it's a situation where, yes, talent did leave, but I think that the replacements that have come in have been just as good, if not better, than the people are leaving. And I think the league as a whole, because of that, is going to be fine. It doesn't matter. There's nobody bigger than the league anymore, which is a great thing. But you just said, if you don't go to any of the other leagues, you don't really want it. Nahar's move to Belgium, good or not good?
It's only good because, as a business perspective, I homegrown developed a player. I got over $3 million. It's a great move for a right back. No brainer. And if someone in a smaller league wants to pay that, fine. How many times have we sold players to Scandinavian leagues for the Andy Nahar number?
Never.
Zero. Right. So there's a common theme here. Anderlecht is, you know, usually in Champions League or in that round of qualifying for Champions League. They wanted Andy Nahar for $3 million plus. Done. No brainer. But don't be selling players for $400,000, $500,000 or letting free agents go to Scandinavia. MLS is better than that.
And am I right in that, in thinking that the league is going to be fine and people are going to leave and they're going to be young players and it's going to be sad to see them go, but there are going to be replacements around the corner? This is a league that people, that good quality players are going to want to play in from all over the world.
Three of the players you used as an example: Jeff Cameron, Breck Shea, and Graham Zuzi. Jeff Cameron, third round draft pick out of University of Rhode Island. No one had any idea who that was. And Graham Zuzi at the combine, every single MLS coach, I'm not lying on this, every MLS coach at the College Cup and that combine of that season said he will struggle in MLS. So the reality is that when players are given an opportunity to play, Roger Espinoza wasn't coming out of Ohio State as the next greatest thing. So we give players the opportunity to play. We create an environment. We've got atmospheres the way we have. We will produce players year in and year out, I can guarantee you.
Who you got this weekend?
I have San Jose hosting New York.
So you're doubling up on Red Bulls.
Oh, listen. I mean, we like stories. That's why I'm okay with pushing Thierry Henry a little bit.
And it's a big match, obviously. Both teams, disappointing results, especially San Jose. So this is going to be a good one you got coming up.
Oh, I love this game, particularly because San Jose is behind. I mean, no Lenhart, no Gordon, no Bates is sure. They've got some issues, no Chavez. They've got some injury issues. And when you look at their opening schedule of Real Salt Lake, New York, Columbus, Seattle, They've got a tough opening schedule, where last year they opened up 7-1-1. This year they're going to be, I think it's going to be a little bit more of a struggle.
All right,
and obviously, which Thierry Henry shows up, because that's my favorite storyline.
So don't talk in the truck. Let's get you on record. Give us the prediction for this weekend's match, San Jose, New York.
Nope. Not doing it.
What? Why not? You gonna save it for the truck?
Hey, it's Tuesday. I keep my predictions for the truck.
So in the truck, you'll tell everybody, and then afterwards you go, hey, I called it. I called the result.
Oh, hey, and I will also tell you when I'm wrong, and I have been wrong plenty of times. It's just I'm usually not on your podcast.
That's true. We got to get you back on over the course of the season. All right, Taylor.
All right, brother. Be good, man.
Thank you, my friend. Take it easy.
For show information, go to pitchpass.com.